Welcome to the Gifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Kai. This podcast is sponsored by the GPS Online Program, which teaches you how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business. For more information, go to ChristopherKai.com. Our guest today is Sean Herman. He's a number one bestselling author of Screen Captured, as well as the founder of a company called Kinzu, which is his hope to be the most trusted brand in how we connect technology with our kids. Sean, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me, Christopher.
When I heard about your story, read about your work, I was blown away about how serendipitous and timely it was, because I just watched this movie or documentary called The Social Dilemma. And for those listeners or viewers that don't know about this, essentially they're saying, hey, everyone, we should be very, 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 very concerned, because a lot of the companies like Facebook and Pinterest and all these social media companies are scientifically making our kids addicted to their platforms, and it's scary what happens. So that's in a nutshell. But as I saw your profile, Sean, I was like, whoa. So first, talk to us about what Screen Captured is and why you were inspired to write that book.
Sure. Screen Captured, I think the seeds of it began when my daughter was about 4 years old. And like a lot of parents, she spent a lot of time on YouTube watching videos. And one afternoon, I was sitting on the couch and she was there with her iPad. And she walked over to me and said, Dad, what does expletive mean? A word that I won't repeat. And I looked at her, blown away, and said, where did you learn that word? And she took me back to the iPad and showed me the video that she was watching. And it was actually a Dora the Explorer video. And we hit play and realized that somebody had dubbed over the video with all kinds of just foul language and completely inappropriate content. And, you know, it was at that moment was really a catalyst just in terms of this relationship that we were going to have with technology, because I realized, I think early on, that technology was going to be here to stay for my daughter. And on the surface, I'm okay with it. I know she's going to grow up into a world where technology is part of her every day. I think it's important that they learn how to use it. But suddenly its innocence, it was kind of washed away. And I started to realize that it wasn't enough to put her in front of the iPad for some amount of time and say, okay, you get 15 minutes or 30 minutes. It was more important what was actually going on that thing. And it really occurred to me that there's still parenting in digital parenting. And I had kind of failed just in terms of really being up to speed on what the risks were around technology. So that set me off on a journey to provide, you know, better education and ultimately better tools around technology for other parents.
And is that common that you have an actual brand like Dora Explorer and they just have people cut into these videos like that?
Yeah, unfortunately. And these show up not only on YouTube, but also on YouTube Kids. And there's awful stories out there of watching videos and suddenly people are cutting in. And there's a famous example that was raised where somebody came in with instructions on suicide, telling kids, A, they should kill themselves, and actually telling them how to slit their wrists to do it. And this was on a video. It was reported, and yet it stayed on the YouTube platform for weeks after, and then a few months later reappeared. And there's a pediatrician who blogged about it, and she's gained quite an audience about it and told the story. And unfortunately, you know, YouTube is littered with this. There's too much content to moderate. And unfortunately, there are people out there that know that's where kids congregate, and they do target them with this sort of content. And I don't know what the motivations, aside from, you know, just making childhood, I guess, a little bit harder. But it is unfortunate, and it's very prevalent, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, this is very personal to me, because I don't have kids right now, but I've taught before. I've taught in a high school for 3 years. I started a homeless youth program. I used to be a college admissions consultant, and I've worked with thousands of kids. And I remember I had a 14-year-old student that I mentored at a homeless shelter in Los Angeles. And she walked up to me at the time, and I was a singer-songwriter for some time. And she said, hey, Christopher, what do you think about this song? I put the earbud into my ears, and it's like, it's a rap song, and it's like, you know, it's just very denigrating to women. And I don't want to tell her what to do, but I said, well, how does that make you feel when someone's saying you're a whore, you're this and that? Because I can easily say as a person of authority, oh, that's bad, but I want her to question it for herself. But ultimately, it's very hard for anyone to parent, whether you as an actual parent or me as a parenting figure, as a teacher, but I want our listeners to know how important it is in terms of what we're doing right now, because it isn't just a song. It's this constant bombardment, which is why I'm fascinated by your book, Screen Capture. So just dive a little bit more into your book, Sean. Is it like a, first, this is the problem, here are some examples and what we can do? Are they very practical things that your readers can learn about?
Yeah, I think, and I definitely hope so. Screen Capture is really fundamentally a collection of stories about my daughter, Kaylee's early experiences with technology. Whether it was the Dora the Explorer example, or I actually lead the book with a story about an app called PopJam, which she was interested in doing. Where it got concerning, and I'm glad you brought up the social dilemma, because in PopJam, I saw a lot of those same patterns that social media platforms are using to kind of drive engagement and hook us in, now showing up in an app that was actually directed towards kids and marketed directly at kids. So I'm talking about things like, gain this many followers and you're going to unlock this feature. Followers are important. We like your post. You should enter a contest, and if you win, you're going to get a lot more followers. So the concern for me with apps like that is now we're training kids to value these things that are actually not important. And these vanity metrics called likes and followers, which now with kids at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, probably not really understanding the vanity aspect of it. And what I worry about with technology and kids more than anything else is this kind of competition it's created, where likes matter, followers matter. And, you know, the evidence is showing a lot of kids are measuring their self-worth in that way. And when we talk about spikes in depression and anxiety among youth, a lot of people are quick to just point to technology as a whole. I don't buy into that. I think technology brings a lot of good. But the one thing I do worry about more than anything else is this culture of how do I measure up and how many likes is my post getting versus my friends or somebody else in school. So that's what I really talk about in the book, why, you know, looking at the clock is the wrong way to look at technology. There are things that are concerning, but also at the end of the day, I think technology has a lot to offer and to offer kids and youth when it comes to creativity and learning and these sort of things. So I do finish the book with hopefully some practical advice that parents can follow just to not get the kids off of technology as a whole, but when they are on technology, let's get them doing productive things more often.
Yeah. You know, Sean, you raise a really important point that's much bigger than just this one app or this one screenshot, because I remember reading about Ray Kroc, who created the what we know as McDonald's. So he actually bought McDonald's back in the 50s and 60s from the McDonald brothers in San Francisco, in California. But the point I'm getting at is, at one point, Ray Kroc, who created what McDonald's is now, he actually would fly around in a helicopter to look for church spires, because the reason, if there are churches there, there'd be families, and those families, there's kids. And one of their marketing aspects was to market McDonald's to kids to have all these cool, fun toys and these playgrounds. Because again, if the kids want to go to McDonald's, then the parents are going to go. But it's the same thing of how they pull them in. And I remember personally of wanting to go to McDonald's and having these Happy Meals and having all these games. But it's the same type of psychological, I don't want to say warfare, but it's actually very insidious. So I want the listeners to really understand that. That's pretty bad from a McDonald's standpoint, but in technology, it could be potentially even worse because it's so ever-present. So I'm really excited and happy that you're here, Sean, to talk about this. Now, you have the book you wrote about Screen Captured. Let's talk about your business called Kinzu. Tell us about how you want this to be the most trusted brand, because clearly there needs to be more of a voice for kids.
Yeah, totally. So Kinzu came about. Kinzu is a messenger, and it's aimed at families and the closest of friends to message on a platform that's actually purpose-built around the needs of children in that kind of 5 and up range, 5 to, you know, 12, 13 is really what we're most interested in. And what we're trying to do with Kinzu, because I don't believe technology is evil, I don't think the old way of I'm going to keep my kid off technology for as long as possible, and then when they're 11 or 12 years old, the stats say, I break down and say, okay, you can go on Snapchat or you can go on TikTok or you can go on Instagram. The issue I have with that is kids are then walking into a world that they don't know a lot about. And there isn't proper kind of guidance giving in those formative years when technology is still, you know, a part of their lives. part of the backstory on Kinzu is my daughter, when we moved cities, was just looking to stay in touch with grandparents and friends back home, schoolmates. I surveyed the market for a solution that she could use, and I could only find one from Facebook. And that was a full stop for me. And no matter what, you know, anyone thinks of Facebook, I'm personally, of course, not a fan, but no matter what anybody thinks, you know, I kind of came to this conclusion that I don't mind my kids being on technology at those early ages, but I don't want Facebook to be the teacher. And that's what really led to creating the business plan for Kinzu, is I wanted to give parents an alternative to Facebook and to actually build something from the ground up, to really build a community of parents around this thing and build a company of aunts and uncles and fathers and mothers that care deeply about kids and their safety and their privacy when they go online. But also create this environment where now parents can be a good digital mentor. Parents can introduce their technology to kids and connect to technology and teach them what it means to be online, surrounded by people that love them and that they love. And that has been really cool. So I think for us to get better at technology when it comes to kids, I think we need better education. And that's where I actively blog and I wrote the book. But also we need better tools and platforms, and adult platforms retrofitting back into the kids space, I don't believe is the answer, because, you know, they're rife with persuasive design and addictive elements and things that are really meant to hook us in, because at the end of the day, they work for advertisers and not for families. And that's really the distinction that we're trying to make.
Yeah, I'm going to really dive into that point, because me as a business owner, I have spent money on Facebook ads. And so as a business owner, it's great because I got to track who the people are. And it's funny for me when I hear some of the more spiritually minded people, it's like, oh my gosh, it's a sign. I'm like, no, it's called a pixel. It's called a tracking you. It's not a coincidence or a sign that you're seeing the same video of Tony Robbins or the same video, whatever. But that's what they're doing with kids too, in that they're so, I don't want to say genius, but it's all science-based and analyzed. So that's why the parents and the administrators that are watching this video and listening to this conversation know that I'm like you, Sean. I don't think technology is bad or evil, but like all things, if you're not really focused on what they're actually doing, what makes you think that they're doing that for your best interest? And with kids, it's a very scary thing, because like you said, I never knew about this whole door explorer, but I know that even, let's say I had a client, he owned numerous restaurants, and he was saying that the companies actually have McDonald's or Papa John's in the actual schools. And I was just so shocked that you have fast food companies that the schools are allowing them into the actual cafeterias. They're like, yeah, Christopher, because at least the reason in the administrator's case at the schools are like, well, the kids are going to go buy McDonald's anyway, so why don't we just have, I'm like, that makes no sense. So I really admire you for having the courage, Sean, because a lot of parents might want to do what you're doing. So talk to us about your courage and your pioneering initiative, because frankly, I admire that. You mentioned that you were a seasoned executive, or you've been in the finance board for some time. Why did you choose that this was such an important thing for you to do, that you literally made it your core priorities right now? Because a lot of people might want to make change, but you went all in. So tell us about that courage. Is that something you were raised with, you developed over time, or just when you saw your daughter and had that experience in that moment, you're like, I got to do something about this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you alluded to it, but prior to starting Kinzu, and I worked for a different startup before, I was in corporate finance, so I was working for a big company. I was trying to climb the corporate ladder, you know, putting in the work and paying the dues and that sort of thing. So it was really a combination of feeling very unfulfilled at work, things not going the way I necessarily wanted from a career standpoint. So, you know, I started being interested in finding a different path, but really, my whole life, I was looking for something with a little bit more purpose. And it wasn't until watching closely, you know, the early experiences that Kaylee was having with technology, and really, you know, having the maternal instinct to do whatever I could to protect my daughter in this world. And I don't know if it was, I don't view it as really courageous. It just felt like, you know, the right thing to do and something to pursue. I did walk into the world probably not knowing as much. You know, it's kind of a unserved market, and there's various reasons for that, but it's notoriously difficult to raise money in this market. it's hard to monetize in the kids market because of, you know, the lack of targeted advertising and all the things that adult platforms can do. So, you know, maybe it's more courageous in retrospect of like, I'm walking into a world that's going to be very hard to crack. But at the end of the day, I look at my daughter every single day and I look at her on the iPad and I look at her messaging friends and family on Kinzu, and it makes it all worth it. And, you know, I'm just so excited to be leading this mission. And, you know, something that not a lot of people, I think about are the fact that kids today actually are the fastest growing group of all internet users. So every year, more kids go online than the year before. Millions and millions of kids go online for the first time every single year. And it is a very underserved market. And because of all that, you know, I think better solutions are needed, but we also need to educate better. And that's really what we're trying to do at Kinzu, is even if you don't want to use the messenger, I mean, we have an active blog. We do a lot of education around technology and what it means. And even if you never download the messenger, I think it's important to get the message out and you know, teach parents things that are a little bit more practical and a little less alarmist, and you know, hopefully giving good advice to figure out how we're going to live symbiotically with technology, because it isn't going anywhere at the end of the day.
Yeah, I do appreciate you taking a very mature way, because again, sometimes people are like, oh, technology is bad, you can't go to them, they're bad, bad, bad. But that doesn't help the conversation, because it's not going away. Facebook isn't going away, Google isn't going away, all these platforms are going away. But I like how you have a more reasoned approach to approaching this, because it's very hard for parents to parent any child, as you know, but with technology, it's even more challenging. I'm curious about the Kinzu. You mentioned you had over 20,000 people that are using it already.
Yeah, we sure do. We launched earlier this year in about May or June. And really this year, it's been about getting the product out there, getting a little bit of feedback from the initial user base and improving the product. But yeah, it's been really encouraging. I think COVID and the need to, you know, be more connected has certainly helped with that. But yeah, the early returns, I mean, we've been building the product for 2 years. We spent over a year designing it along with 40, 50 families, really taking care, because we're trying to address everybody from 5-year-olds to 85-year-olds. And it's really hard to design for that, and especially around the privacy legislation. So yeah, really, really proud of where we've gotten so far. We think we're just getting started. And yeah, I would definitely say the early returns are definitely positive.
And that's fascinating. So 20,000 people, how are you able to scale so quickly? I mean, it's only been a few months. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's been a combination of, ironically, I mean, we're on Facebook and Google telling people about it. And that's another realistic thing is, like, you know, I think the best way I had it described to me is like, those are attacks on business today. And we wish we didn't have to use those channels. But the fact is, that's where people are today. So with that, but more encouraged by organic growth, which is really people finding us through word of mouth, just searching for, you know, alternative to Facebook Messenger Kids on the App Store, you know, these sort of things. And then obviously network effects. Once people start getting onto Kinzu and really enjoying the product, then they're inviting friends and family onto it. And that's actually making up the majority of our growth, which is really, really encouraging. Ideally, you would never want to do any paid marketing. Especially with what we do and how we feel about, you know, those platforms and privacy. But, you know, if that's the hill you choose to die on, you will die. Unfortunately, that's just the reality of life today. But like I say, we definitely hone in more on the organic side of things and are really encouraged by what's happening there.
That's amazing. And so what has the feedback been from some of your users? I mean, 20,000 users, and these are all around the world, I'm assuming?
Actually, just in Canada and the US so far.
Oh, that's even amazing. I mean, I think there's even a higher growth in countries like in Asia, where they have even higher screen times and screen captures. So most of your growth has been in the Canada and US. Do you plan on going even more broad and internationally?
We do. It's actually imminent. So we're also developing a video calling feature. So adding that complexity at the same time expanding into new markets didn't make sense. So we're going to introduce video calling in Canada and the US. But at the risk of being boring, outside of the US, there's different privacy legislation. So we actually ran a project to make sure that we aligned with that, and proud to say we do. So GDPR, which is the most stringent regulation in the world around privacy and data handling, we made sure that we're aligned to all of the standards there, which we are and were. But we've done that work, and now basically we're looking to expand into other English dominant countries in the near future. And then the next obvious step after that is starting to offer localization to other countries, like some of the ones that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's amazing. And why did you choose to call it Kinzu, Sean?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love telling the story of the name. So Kinzu came about. The kin part represents, you know, kin, friends and family, the people closest to us. Zu is an analogy that we use a lot. When we're trying to teach our kids about animals, we don't just drop them off in the wild and let them explore. It's dangerous. So what do? We take them to the zoo. And why do we take them to the zoo? The zoo still allows for playful exploration, but it puts the right structures in place to keep the kids safe. And that's the analogy that we've always used for Kinzu. We don't want to create an environment where parents are monitoring every aspect of what the kids are doing. We don't want to create something that handcuffs the kids where it's no fun to use, or they feel like they can't take a step without intervention from the parents. So where we really focused is making sure that our core workflows were built to be so tight and so just well built, just in terms of privacy and safety, that if we manage how people onboard onto the product, if we make them prove that they're an adult when they say they're an adult, if we make sure that parents on both sides have to approve friend and contact requests for the kids, if we do all of those things and do them really well, then the kids, once they're actually connected with people, have room to play and they have room to actually feel empowered and they have room to actually learn what it means online. So we don't rely heavy on moderation. We really work on preventative aspects. And what we want to do is create that kind of that zoo-like atmosphere where kids can come in, be playful. There's structures in place to keep them safe, but it doesn't require, you know, hand-holding at every turn.
Yeah. No, it's a cool name with a great story, but it also sounds cool for kids. I mean, it's like Yahoo, you know? I mean, it just sounds like a great name that's very fitting for your brand and for your desire to create this vision of the most trusted brand, building technology for kids' purposes as well as parents. You know, one of my favorite memories growing up was when I would communicate with my grandparents in Hong Kong. So I was born and raised in New York City. My parents from Hong Kong. So I would spend many, many summers as a kid in Hong Kong. And every month, my mom would always ask my two older brothers and I to write letters. Back then, we actually wrote letters. And I frankly hated it because I had to write it in Chinese. And it's very hard to write in Chinese. And I read the same things every single time. How are you, grandmother, grandfather, and Big N? I'm doing well. Are you doing well? Because I didn't really know a lot of Chinese, right? So I would send these letters every month to my grandparents, and every year when I'd go to visit them in Hong Kong, I would actually go into my grandfather's study and I would see the actual letters that I sent to him. It really meant a lot to him, and it's a connection that we have. And so whether you're connecting with a letter or now in the virtual world, do you have any stories that you want to share about what you're so proud of? I mean, you talk about your kids and they're communicating. So who are they communicating with? And is there a story you can share with us that we can really make this a personal desire to help you, to buy your book, to be part of your cause, to be part of your business? Because really, it's about that connection that I have to this day. My grandfather has passed over 15 years ago, but I still remember those letters I write every single month as a kid to connect and communicate with him across thousands of hours and thousands of miles. But now in a different time, we have a different way to communicate. So for you, are there stories that you can share about how your kids communicate with their kin?
Yeah, there's a saying that I have, which is, you know, technology isn't destroying a generation. It's actually connecting generations in ways never before possible. And I think that's really cool. And to take that into my household, you know, growing up, I didn't have a great relationship with my parents. When I left the house, you know, didn't speak to them very often. And they've now passed, and, you know, that's always kind of sat with me. And I grew up wishing that we had a closer family. I wasn't, unfortunately, able to meet my grandparents. There was no legacy there. I had no idea who they were and things like that. And when I look at that as a whole, now, just like when she was watching the Dora video when she was 4 years old, I watch my 10-year-old Kaylee on the couch now, and I'll look over and see what she's doing there. And, you know, the easy to say, well, you know, you're watching YouTube, get off the iPad or these sort of things. But when I look over her shoulder and I see her texting with her grandma back in Calgary, and they're sending videos and they're sending audio messages, and Kaylee is sending a picture of her report card because she's so proud that she got that A in math. and they have this very direct relationship. It more than once has, you know, brings a tear to my eye because I get to see this relationship that is so authentic between the two and so real. And I can speak from experience when I travel, when the world is normal and I travel a lot, getting a message directly from my daughter in Kinzu versus, you know, saying, "Daddy, I miss you," or "Dad, I love you," or "When are you coming home?" or telling me about her day. Comparing that experience with my wife saying, "Oh, by the way, Kaylee says hi," is just a world of difference. And when I see and I know that Kaylee's grandmother is getting that same experience and they're having this very direct relationship instead of indirect, and that's all made possible by technology, I think that's pretty awesome. And I think that what I'm most proud of with Kinzu is if we can give that experience to other parents out there and other grandparents out there to truly understand, you know, the closeness and the very realness that you feel when you get that notification of, you know, Kaylee sent you a message. And that twinkle I get in my eye every time that happens, and knowing other parents are getting that as well, that's why we do it, and that's really the why behind Kinzu. So really excited to, you know, bring it to the world. And
thank you for listening to the Gifters Podcast. If you want to learn how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business, go to christopherkai.com to learn more.